Hi, and welcome to the DeviantArt Podcast. My name is Matt Buchholz, and I'm going to be your host today. And today we have a very special guest joining us. We've got Lillian Garcia.
Welcome. Hi, thank you. It's so great to be here. I appreciate
it. It's great having you. So you may know Lillian from being EP and host of Chasing Glory, being a singer-songwriter, or being a former WWE host. Mm. You've done it all.
Well, I wouldn't say all, but I've done a lot. I don't even know. It was like a journey that I didn't even expect.
I like that today we've kind of turned the tables on you. Normally you're interviewing people, and today you get to be interviewed.
I'm in the hot seat.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
All right. Well, to get things started, then we're going to do some rapid fire questions, get you ready to be on that side of the table.
Here we go.
All right. So, would you rather live on the beach or in the mountains?
Beach.
Favorite game as a kid?
Favorite game? Nintendo football.
You have a time machine. Do you go back in time or to the future?
Future.
Have you ever done something heroic?
Heroic? I think just being nice as much as I can is pretty heroic, right?
That's a great one. Three songs on your desert island mixtape.
Oh, whoa. Jeez. That one, I think you got me. It's crazy. I love songs, but I was just telling my husband this. I don't know a lot of artists anymore because there's so many that I'll hear a song, but I don't remember who's singing them.
That's a tough one.
I could probably show you my list, but I can't. I wouldn't even know who's on it.
Okay. Love or hate roller coasters?
Love. Oh. Love. But my equilibrium is not loving it so much anymore.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Have you ever owned a lava lamp?
Yes, have one now.
The Venn diagram of you, what are three things that make up you?
Give me an example.
Like for me, it would be like a farm because I grew up in a small town.
Okay.
Video games and just a hefty dose of pop culture.
Okay, so music for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Adventure.
Ooh.
Travel.
Nice.
Yes.
That is a heroic one. You've got it set.
There we go.
And do you believe in ghosts?
Yes. Yeah?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. Everyone at home, you guys believe in ghosts, yeah? Yeah. All right. So now that we're nice and warm.
Okay.
I just want to hear about your journey. Take us from the very top. How did you get to where you are today?
Whoa. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I was actually raised in Madrid, Spain. My dad worked for the military, the U.S. military. He was a lieutenant colonel. And so he was working for the embassy. And it was really cool, though, because he was so embedded and he worked for, like, intelligence. There's things that literally went still by the time he passed away, he was never... Like, he never told my sister and I anything, like, secret stuff, because he was so scared that we would know something. I don't know. It's a crazy thing with the military. But anyway, it was a really neat way to grow up, especially because I didn't have to travel around like an army brat where I was constantly moving. Like, we were there for a solid 8 years. But being in Europe, we traveled a lot on our own for fun. And so from that, I feel like I got to explore a lot of different cultures. And to this day, I feel like that helps me.
Mm-hmm.
I moved when I was 8 to the United States. And it was crazy because I was so excited to come to the U.S. And pictures of the Statue of Liberty, for some reason, she was white. And so when I get to New York and she's green, I'm like... What is going on? She's dirty. So that was a shock right there.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, like, I don't know why she was white. But it was really cool because we were raised in South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina. So from there, my parents really instilled just doing good in school. And my mom was like, I don't care what you guys want to be, my sister and I. She was just, please go to college. That's the only thing I ask is go to college. So we went to college, and I will never forget this. So when I went, I initially wanted to be in medical school, and I wanted to be a heart surgeon. When I really started diving into it, I was like, oh, this is going to be forever that I'm going to be in school. And then the thought of just being in a hospital full time, all of a sudden, my art side, because I've been singing since I was 5,
mm-hmm.
it just didn't match. So mm-hmm. I'm like, you know what? I really want to continue singing. And I switched over to journalism. My thing is, though, I don't really like to write very much. I love to express myself in speaking. but not necessarily writing. So journalism didn't work out. So it was a dean that I had who, that I was introduced to. He was in media arts. And so he said, look, I think if you like the front of the camera so much, you should learn the back of the camera. And I was like, you're absolutely right. I think that's a great idea. So he said, we have a program here where you can learn filmmaking, producing, directing, learn photography, editing, all of that. And I said, this seems like it's right up my alley. The best decision ever. First of all, I ended up getting like president's list and doing really good because I was so into it. Mm-hmm. I loved editing. I mean, I could be up all night long editing a project and go straight into a test or something. So it didn't seem like it was work, you know, homework. So when I graduated, what's so great is the fact that now with Chasing Glory, with my podcast, when I first started it, I was a one-woman show. And so I was editing my own things. I was film, you know, when we went to video as well, I was behind the camera setting everything up. Mm-hmm. And then I'd do the clap and then I'd go in and be like, hi, I'm Lillian. Welcome to Chasing Glory. Like, and then I'd take the camera off, you know, and upload all the files and then start editing that. So it really taught me both sides, which has been very helpful. And I recommend that to people is if you go to college, just pick something that you're passionate about and you'll do well. But WWE was out of the blue because I had been in radio. I was hosting shows. I decided to move to New York and definitely pursue singing because I said, okay, if this is my passion, I got to go for it. So I was singing. I was singing in a band. And then WWE, the audition came. And I almost didn't do it because I didn't see myself in wrestling. I was like, what the hell, really? I watched as a kid. Yeah. I think we've all somewhere in our lives have been touched by WWE and have watched it either as a kid or growing up, you know, something. But I was like, I don't see myself being in it. And the best advice that I actually accepted was my agent who said, go to the audition, you never know. So I did. And I always say this, I say, God, let me just do my best. I don't want to not get it because I didn't just put everything into it, whether it's meant for me or not. That will be decided later. But let me just go in there and nail it. So I did. And I knew it. I knew it, too. When I left, I mean, it was a six-month project or process. But they had called me back and they said there was a show called SmackDown. So they had brought me back. So I knew in both of my auditions, I was like, my God, I know I nailed it. But I was on the train ride home going, if they offer this to me, is this even the right path? And then this is a phrase I always say, if it's meant to be, God, if it's meant to be, make it obvious. If it's not meant to be, make it obvious. So I got the call and they said, we'd like to try you out for 2 to 3 months, but you could quit at any time. That was obvious.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so if I show up on the very first day and I absolutely hate it, then I could just walk away. Done. I'll go. Well, I show up. Iowa was the city we were at because, as you know, it travels around. And that was 1999. And I was given the tour of the arena. I still remember it to this day. Michael Cole was taking me around. And I still don't know what I'm doing, by the way.
Right.
I still don't know what I'm going to be doing. Like, I just know it's not wrestling. But my audition, it was like a lot of, commentary, that kind of thing. And they did put me in the booth for commentary as far as play-by-play. That was horrible. That part I knew I didn't nail. But I told them, I said, I know you're not going to be hiring me for this.
Yeah.
But I didn't know for sure what it was. And so I'm just looking around in the arena and I'm like, whoa, this is really cool. And I kind of want to give this a shot. And who knows if I can incorporate singing into this. And God, long story short, man, they told me that afternoon at 3:30 is when I found out that I was going to be hosting Monday Night Raw that night. That night. It wasn't like weeks later or months later. You've got some training to do. Nope. Yep. You've got like an hour or something of a training to do.
Time for prep.
Time for prep. So I got thrown into the lion's den and it wasn't until, like, I sat down with Tony Chimley, told me exactly what to say, so I was writing out my cards really fast. And it wasn't until I was sitting at ringside an hour before Monday Night Raw that I got to watch him do Sunday Night Heat, which is a show that was before Raw at that time. So I watched him do four matches. That was my training. And then 20 minutes before going live, all of a sudden is when I got told, oh yeah, you can't use cue cards. And Matt, when I say that I almost ran, I almost ran.
I believe it.
I was so overwhelmed. I was so not prepared. I was so not trained. Think about it. There's 20,000 people in the arena.
Yeah.
And there's 146 countries that are watching you. And I mean, millions. Our ratings at that time were about 14 million people viewing the show.
Yeah. That's like prime Attitude Era.
Oh, yeah. And just to give you an example, I think now they got like 2 or 3 million. So, I mean, it was a lot because there was no Netflix. There was no Amazon.
Right.
There was, you know, a competition of so much to watch was so much less. So eyes were on Monday Night Raw.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really good with The Rock and Stone Cold, you know, all of that. So, yeah, I mean, I got thrown in, and there was a few things that I did to prepare myself. But, I mean, from that, you know, then I ended up leaving after 15 years, and now I'm the PFL MMA cage announcer, which is insane, crossing from wrestling into MMA, but it's been great. And I got to sing on the show. And that's what's so beautiful is that I got to incorporate my love of singing within it and started doing the national anthem at every event. And that was because of The Rock, who actually found out that I sang and told the producers. And then they gave me a shot and they loved it. And Vince McMahon was like, all right, you're going to sing at every single event. And it's just amazing if you can allow yourself to just let the journey unfold and not try to stifle it and say, no, it's got to look one way, which was my problem for a very long time, that I felt like it had to look one way. And I even got depressed for a while there because I was thinking, well, how the heck did I end up here? And this is not what I thought, because I wanted to be Lady Gaga, Katy Perry, you know. But then I look and I go, whoa, like this is so much better because I've gotten to do so many different things in my life.
Yeah, I think that's something really interesting in that everyone kind of has to find their own creative path.
Yeah.
And you found such a great way to make it genuinely and uniquely yours. Like at the end of the day, you kind of have to find like what really resonates with you and how to celebrate that and bring that out into what you do.
Yeah. I think that the best thing that I did and the best thing that happened, right? The fact that they didn't tell me weeks before, hey, you're going to be a ring announcer. I didn't watch what Howard Finkel was doing or Tony Chimmel. I didn't even know to prep for that. So when I got thrown in there that day, even when I went home that night, what my main focus was is, okay, I've got to memorize now. I can't use cue cards. So I've got to memorize these towns, these weights, these, you know, superstars' names, what kind of title they hold, all of this information. So let me memorize that. But I didn't sit there and say, okay, let me watch Howard Finkel. Let me watch Tony Chimmel. Let me see how they do it. Because I thought right there in my mind, I said, I don't want to copy them. And I was one that when I was in pop, you know, the bands, we did a lot of pop music. It was a cover band for years. So I would emulate a lot of the people. And instead of trying to make it my own, because that was not the thing to really do at that time, I really would try to nail it and sound like them. And I realized with this, I didn't want to do that. I said, I don't want to sound like somebody else. I want to create my own sound. And so I didn't, and it was hard for a while. I mean, if you go back and you listen to me at 1999, like, it was horrible. There was no cadence. There was no rhythm. It's just like, the following contest is scheduled for one fall. Like, I had no idea what the heck I was doing. But I found my rhythm by just keep doing it, keep trusting, keep studying, keep passion, and I found my rhythm. And so people would literally go, wow, you just sound so different than them, right? You've got your own style. And so I think for all of your art culture and community, I would say that is, don't look at other people's paintings and go, how can I do that? Is no, what's in you? How can you be you and bring the best you and put that on canvas or, you know, wherever it is you're creating on a computer and all? Because that was something that really benefited me.
Yeah, I think that you really found like the perfect way to draw that across to the art community is it is I mean, it is a creative field, being able to speak with people and being able to sing and being able to announce. And finding what makes it special to you is what's so important, because, you know, facsimiles or copies or any sort of mimic is going to be good, but you can never be better than that original person.
Right.
And so finding your own unique thing is going to make you be able to really stand out and hit the peak of what you can do.
Right. I totally agree. I think that also when you do that and then you look back at your art, you will appreciate it more, because you won't look at it as, well, I just copied this person, you know. Or, no, it's, and I'm not saying you can get inspiration from people, okay? I think that all of us, I think it's great to be inspired and, and take that and go, okay, I was inspired by that. Now, how can I make that into something of my own and expand on it? And I think that that's what life is, because basically everything's been done. You think about it, everything's pretty much been done. But when you put your own spin on it, that's where it's like, whoa, okay, it's taken it to another level.
Right.
Yeah.
So one thing that I'd really like to hit is, you talk about like kind of how when you went into WWE, you didn't know exactly what you were getting into.
Yeah.
And you didn't have really the time to prepare. And then you look at where you are now and you're like at the very, very top.
Thanks.
And so what sort of mentality do you go into each of those with when you find like, okay, I'm going to tackle something new
where
I might not be prepared, or I might be slightly uncomfortable or nervous going into this? What sort of mentality did you have to put yourself in to really tackle that?
Well, to set you up with that, when I was sitting there and the guy next to me had told me, hey, you know, 20 minutes before going live, you can't use cue cards. And I almost ran. It was 10 minutes before going live that I then remembered back when I was 9 years old and I was thrown into the swim team without knowing how to swim. And I remembered the moment of, I was trying to practice and trying to get my rhythm, and I saw everybody, you know, breathing from the side. And I was like, how do you do that? How do I get into Michael Phelps mode, you know, and not gag? Because that was the problem, is every time I tried to do it, I would just gag and swallow all this water. And so I remember they asked me, there was one girl that got sick and I wasn't ready. I was not ready, but they asked me to be in a relay because they had nobody else to turn to. And so I was like, okay, I got this. And so I dive in and I'm going and I'm swimming. Now I had still at that time, when you're 9 years old, when you're 8 and under, you get to swim one lap. When you're 9 and over, you have to swim two. So not only did I get into the swim team without knowing how to swim, but now I got to swim two laps from the get-go. Yeah. Okay, overwhelming. So I touched the wall. And I remember I was on my way back and I'm like, oh my God, I am further than I've ever been. This is going amazing. This is great. And I go to the side and whoa, I put in all this water in my mouth, started gagging. I stood up. Now, as soon as you touch the floor, you're disqualified. That's it. You're done. So I started crying and all the people, I could see them like, you know, and they're trying to think, is she going to be okay? Do we go in after her? And so I remember they started to come in after me and I was like, no. And I got really like angry at myself for, damn it, you know. But I just knew at that moment I wanted to finish. So I finished the round, I mean, just roar of applause that I got from finishing. And so I remembered at that moment, I was like, wow, it's really important to finish. And then fast forward, I ended up being in the swim team for 8 years. Broke records, and I even coached swim team for two.
Wow.
So it turned into something so like ominous into something so amazing. So I remembered that moment right before going live. And then I remembered also I don't remember the exact year, but there was a huge hurricane that hit South Carolina. And I was working at a radio station. Now I was just selling. And from that, when the hurricane hit, I was selling commercials. And so when the hurricane hit, though, I told the guy, I said, you know what? I could actually, since I've been in a band, I could put a benefit together to help. It was Charleston that really got bombarded. I said, I could really help put this together and raise money. Well, we had to do it so fast that they were like, okay, we're going to put you on the air Wednesday, Thursday, Friday to advertise the Saturday benefit jam. So they put me on the air, and then the benefit jam goes great. And then that Monday when I came in, they're like, oh, you and Chuck Findley were amazing. We're going to put you on the morning show. So they threw me in there, and I didn't know what I was doing, but I figured it out the hard way, made mistakes like crazy, just like I did, you know, swimming, just like everything, made mistakes like crazy. But I figured it out, and then they gave me an opportunity to also, one day they said, we want you to run the board run your own show for Christmas Eve. So I was like, okay, but somebody's going to teach me how to run the board, right? Because Chuck's been running the board. I've just been like the sidekick. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, Frankie will take care of you, no problem. So I show up Christmas Eve, and I show up early. Frankie's on air, so Frankie's not paying attention to me. And now it's getting closer to when I'm going to take over. And I'm looking at the clock, and I'm like, Frankie, hello? And he's like, just pushing me off. Next thing you know, it's like 10 minutes till. I walk in the booth, because that 10 minutes till is when you do the crossover. And he's like, yeah, we got, Frankie's on the air going, yeah, we got Lillian here. She's going to be doing Christmas Eve. You guys, make sure you call in and keep her busy and all this. And I'm like, yeah, guys, I'm doing my own show. Like, I'm all alone and it's going to be a lot of fun. And, make sure you're with me. We go off and he plays the song. And I said, okay, so I guess you're going to show me how to run this board like really fast. He goes, sorry, Lil, I got to go, man. My family's waiting for me. I went, what the heck is this? Like, is he trying to sabotage me? Like, what is going on? He leaves. And I'm at a radio station all by myself. Again, overwhelming. It's a CHR station. This is not a college station. This was a top 40 station. And so I was so overwhelmed. But I remember that I got on the air and I just authentically told everybody, yeah, guys, you remember Frankie just left? Well, I am at a radio station all by myself. And guess what? I don't even know what I'm doing. I have no idea what buttons to push on this board, but I'm hoping that you guys will be with me. And let's just get some Christmas music on. And I'm sure you're going to hear some dead air. And by God, there was a lot of dead air that night. And, I was so authentic that people were pouring in, calling, this is great, you're doing great, don't worry, and again, there'd be another dead air, and I'm like, sorry guys, I'm still here, I'm alive, everything's okay, but I've got all the stuff that I'm trying to figure out, So I think that's another thing, is just be authentic. So basically, from those two, I remembered that, and I said, okay, what did I learn from this that I can apply going live? And so I was like, all right, little by little, chunk it out. Don't worry about trying to do, the entire two laps just chunk it out. And just what do I have to do this half a lap? Or what do I have to do during these songs, that are playing? Or, so I chunked it out. And then I just relied on, you got this, you got through this before, you can do this, you can do this. And just kept talking to myself. And then just be authentic. If I messed up, I just was authentic. And just mm-hmm. be like, oops, sorry, And so I think that maybe that's something that can help people when they're hired to do something, that they look at the project and they go, holy cow, how am I supposed to pull this off?
Yeah.
It's just go, okay, just chunk it out. What do I need to do right now? Not even for the whole day, but what do I need to do right now? And rely on, okay, what have I learned from anything in my past that has gotten me to where I am today? And when you pull all those experiences forward, you'll see that you really know more than you thought you did, and you can handle more than you think you can handle to get mm-hmm. the project done.
I think one of the cool things that you mentioned there too is it's not focusing on that end project, right?
Right.
So many people, especially with like visual arts, will see a finished product and think like, that's where it is. So many people tend to focus on that final result, and they don't allow themselves the opportunity to have the steps in between. So as they work towards something, they see like, well, this sketch that I'm on isn't as good as the final product should be. I should just stop. And they allow themselves to really have that kind of self-doubt and the lack of the journey and the lack of that authenticity to themselves even.
Yeah.
Where they don't allow themselves to have those sort of learning experiences.
Well, I can give you an example of songs that I write.
Yeah.
Okay. It's art, right? Mm-hmm. So there'll be songs that I start and I'm like, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to say. I know exactly like what I mean. And I when I write a song, I always let the music speak to me first. For like, for example, I like co-writing with people. So I'll get with a producer and he creates some beats and stuff. And then I'm like, and I just start humming some melody lines. I love creating melodies. And so once we start putting down a melody line for it, then I let the song speak to me as to what do I want to write about? What does this song feel like it should be about? And I do bring a lot of my life into it, but I think that that's, you know, something that I definitely listen to it. And then from there, I start writing the words. Now, words to me are hard to remember. I don't really like to write, right? The journalism, like, it's tough for me. I hear melodies all day long, but lyrically, it's tougher. There's my challenge. But I'm like, okay, I'm still going to push through my challenge. And so what I've done is instead of just as a little sidebar, instead of me trying to write, be a blogger, for example, I said, no, I'm going to be a vlogger. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know I can do video. Instead of me trying to write an entire book or something like that right now, okay, let me just write this song or let me write this chorus. Again, it's about chunking it out.
Mm-hmm.
When I get stuck, I don't say, okay, never mind, this song, what was I thinking? I give it a break. I put it to the side a little bit. And then I'll think about it. I'll think about it, you know, during the day or next day, you know, but I don't try to, like, if it's not coming, it's not coming. And then sometimes it's crazy what happens when you do that. Next day, could be a week, all of a sudden, it's like, that's it. And then I go back to it and I remember. So I think that forced art, that's tough. But if you have to, now, if you're on a project and you have to, is try to find a fun way to make it. So it's not like, I have this deadline. Oh my gosh, I got to turn this in. You know, how am I supposed to do this? But if you can tap into, I would say tap into your inner child. If you could tap into your inner child and say, okay, if my inner child had this drawing that she had to create or this project that, you know, had to create, what would that, because kids, man, they don't think twice.
They're amazing.
Right?
Like, no doubt, they just go.
They just go. Don't overthink things. And so sometimes I'll look at that too and I'll go, all right, if I had this kid or if I had this, then what would I do? Or even with a song, well, how would I write it? Even if it's quirky, how would I write it? And then all of a sudden inspiration comes and it's just more fun. Yeah, so it opens up a lot of that creativity juice.
Yeah. Well, speaking of being inspired, who are some people or some projects right now that you feel really inspired by?
Well, I have to say this because being in the art world, I appreciate, I'm in a different kind of art world, right? But when I heard that I was going to be on this podcast, I have so much appreciation for artists when it comes to drawing, when it comes to painting. Unfortunately, I did not get that talent. I
don't know. I suck.
Oh, did you see my little character? Oh my God. That's it. It's that and stick figures. I feel my sister, she's my older sister, my only sister. I love her to death. That girl can draw. Dahlia Garcia, and her Instagram's Dahlia Garcia Artist. And she's like painted this huge mural for me. She's I always say she stood over my crib when I was born and just sucked out all of the art that I had of the ability to draw because she's really good. She does sculptures, she does all this. She inspires me though so much because she also sings. Mm-hmm. So I was like, wow, she got both. She got singing and she got the you know, drawing. When I see how much she puts into her art, and when I say fun, like she does some whimsical things. And so it inspires me to keep things fun as well. So I think I think it's important to find somebody that inspires you for sure.
What is one like project that you've worked on or one thing that you've done that really just meant a lot to you?
I've been able to do a lot of great things. Like I'm so grateful. Gratitude. I live with so much gratitude. Something that was very profound, life-changing for me, that came out of something that was so dark, was 9/11. So I was in Houston, Texas, and it was on a Tuesday, obviously. We know that. And we were going to tape SmackDown that day when I found out and I got the call and everything about 9/11. And I had lived in New York at the time. And we decided, well, with WWE, everything got canceled, right? Mm. So Vince McMahon, like everybody canceled all the sporting, you know, the sporting games that weekend, everybody, NFL, all of that was canceled. But Vince McMahon from WWE decided, no, that's exactly what the terrorists want us to do. So what we're going to do is we're going to go live instead of, like I said, we usually, that at that time, we taped SmackDown on Tuesdays and it would air on Thursdays. Mm-hmm. He said, we're going to go live on Thursday. And we're going to do a huge tribute show. And Lillian, he came up to me, he goes, I want you to kick everything off with the national anthem. Holy moly. Talk about an overwhelming, you know, feeling of, ha, what? Like, and at the time, because later on as it evolved, because I sang it for so long, later on as it evolved that I would sing, we had music and all that. But at that time, I was doing everything a cappella. I opened up 9/13. It was a SmackDown show with the national anthem after Vince McMahon had come out there and he really gave a hell of a speech. He really did. Then all the superstars lined up on the ramp and there's little old me singing the national anthem that day and everyone's holding up flags and that arena needed that moment. The country needed that moment so much. The fact that it was placed on my shoulders was life-changing. First, as an Army brat, my dad was a lieutenant colonel, fought in Vietnam. Like, just being an American and that happening, it was really, you know, so meaningful and it hit me really hard. So the fact that I got to do the national anthem for such a big event, it changed it because, A, from that moment on when I did the national anthem, I said, this is not about me and my voice and singing. This is about what the anthem represents and about the impact that it can make for others. And I started realizing that that's everything in my life, everything that I do. It's not about me. Chasing Glory, my podcast, it's not about me. It's about creating such a community and my guests that come on there and really share some hard things that they've gone through. In hopes to help so many people out there that feel so alone, they feel depressed, they feel overwhelmed, they, you know, they've gone through hard things in their life and don't know what to do with it. And so everything that I do, that's the moment that it changed, is how, even when I meet someone, it's not about how you can make me feel. It's about how can I make you feel when I'm meeting you and make mm-hmm. you feel important when I'm meeting you, making eye contact, you know, but any song that I write. Now all my songs are about inspiration. They're about getting through tough times. So that moment changed everything. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy how one moment can do that if you allow it and if you really listen to it. So yeah, it was a silver lining for me. I think everything has a silver lining. It's horrible what happened. But when something like that happens to a country, to anyone, to even your personal life, if you can focus on what's the silver lining that I can take from this and then apply it to your entire life, that's when your life is going to create so much more meaning than you ever thought it could have.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah. And I think that now, before we wrap, we just need to hear, we've heard about you singing so much.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like, I would love to hear just a little bit from you.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nothing like being put on the spot.
I know. That's
what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But you got to seize an opportunity and take a risk.
Uh-huh.
All right. So we've talked about the national anthem. Obviously, I'm not going to sing the whole thing, but it is something so special. And I want people to understand that, too. When they hear it, really listen to the words and what this represents, and our military. A huge shout out to our military, our veterans, everybody out there that keep us safe. But, okay. Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight of the ramparts we are so gallantly streaming. And that's where I leave it off.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you so much for coming in today. Like, it was a pleasure
having
you. Oh,
so awesome to be here, especially in a community that I didn't even think that I could belong in because I can't draw, but it feels good to be accepted.
It's creativity.
Me and my little stick figures. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And again, where can people watch or listen to Chasing Glory?
Oh, yes. Okay, so Chasing Glory on Instagram is just at Chasing Glory. We're building a community there so people can not feel alone with all their own struggles. But you can watch the show, youtube.com/Lillian Garcia. You can also listen wherever you get your podcast, just Chasing Glory with Lillian Garcia. And an app. We have the Chasing Glory app, so it's super simple.
There we go. You guys made it really easy.
Yeah. We're trying to, you know, it's like you guys build a community here. Mm-hmm. We're building a community there. That's all.
It's amazing.
Thank you.
And thank you guys for tuning in today. Again, make sure to like, subscribe, leave us a review on iTunes, please. And again, my name is Matt Buchholz, and you can find me on DeviantArt at GGMattB. Thank you for tuning in.